parents are the ones who ultimately have both the legal and moral responsibility for the upbringing of their children.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Today we will be talking about a new story from the state of Delaware. Apparently, Delaware public school officials are considering a proposed regulation that would allow students to self-identify not only their gender, whether they're male, female, or other, but also their race. And to do so potentially without any involvement at all from their parents. Now, our guest today is Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at our great friends, the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., and he's also the editor of FRC's agenda-setting booklet, 25 Pro-Family Policy Goals for the Nation. Peter Sprigg, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us on the show again.
Well, it's great to be back with you.
Well, thanks so much, Peter. It's always a pleasure to discuss these pressing issues with you. And as I said, this one out of Delaware really kind of borders on what we might consider to be insanity. But considering the direction that our culture is shifting, I guess it's just kind of a natural progression of those things. Tell us, Peter, if you would, about Regulation 225 that Delaware education officials are considering. What does this regulation propose?
Well, this is a proposed non-discrimination regulation for coming out of the State Department of Education in Delaware. And so it forbids discrimination based on a whole range of protected characteristics or categories, as is fairly typical with these things. But the thing that was quite startling and that drew attention first from our friends at the Family Policy Council there in Delaware, and then from Todd Starnes, made this sort of a national media story. It said that children or all students enrolled in a Delaware public school may self-identify gender or race. Now, this idea of self-identifying gender, that's radical enough, but that's sort of the core of the transgender movement. But this, to make it even more absurd, Delaware's regulation is adding race as something that a person can self-identify. So as Todd Starnes put it in a column, little white boys could begin to identify as a little black girl, if they chose to.
Well, it's really remarkable. You've already mentioned this, Peter, but one of the most concerning issues here is the use of the term protected characteristics. Explain that for us, if you would, and what does that encompass from a legal perspective? What does that really mean?
Well, there are certain characteristics such as race, national origin, and sex, and religion are typical categories that are well established in law at both the federal level and in various state laws. For example, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibited racial discrimination in employment, covered basically those key categories. But in recent years, we've seen the number of categories of protected characteristics expand greatly. And so, for example, in the Delaware one, they have separate categories for sex, gender identity, and gender expression. Mm. So there's four separate categories having to do with sort of being male or female. And no definitions are offered for any of these terms. And so it becomes a little bit ridiculous sometimes, especially when the characteristics are something that is purely subjective and self-identified, as we're talking about here, basically that you can choose to place yourself in one of these protected categories.
And so this proposal would shift from what we've traditionally known as characteristics that are based on immutable characteristics or things that do not change or that are, as you said, protected under the Constitution, such as religion, to completely subjective measures where a person may identify a certain way as far as sex or race one day or 1 minute of one day, and the very next minute or the very next day decides that they're someone else entirely. Well, another really concerning aspect of this proposal, Peter, is the explicit admission that parents should have no part at all in the decisions their children are making or the discussions their children are having with school administrators about these matters, which are quite significant matters, to say the least. What, if any, legal recourse do parents have to protect their children as well as their own legal rights in these types of circumstances?
Well, I think parents, first of all, need to assert their rights. And there's kind of a, I would say, a chain of command, so to speak, through which you should go if you have concerns about this as a parent. And I discuss this in a pamphlet that we've published at Family Research Council called A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education. That's available on our website at frc.org. But certainly, if you have a concern with how a particular classroom teacher is addressing this issue or particular school, you can go to the teacher, go to the principal, and discuss it with them, explain your concerns. If you don't get satisfaction there, you might have to bring it then to the superintendent or to the local school board. If you're not getting satisfaction from the administration and you do bring it to the school board, then you may be at the point of making it a public issue rather than just a private discussion, and it may help to form alliances with other like-minded parents who are concerned about the issue. And then if you really feel your rights are being violated and you're not getting any satisfaction through any sort of appeals to their conscience, then it may come to the point of having to go to one of the legal advocacy groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom. And they have, on at least a couple of occasions, filed suit on behalf of parents concerning these transgender issues.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And we're a firm believer in that chain of command that you speak about as well, going to the teacher or the offending party initially and having a conversation with them, and then follow things up that chain of command if you don't find resolution to the issue, a satisfactory resolution to those issues. And then, as you say, ultimately, it may require legal intervention. But I think it's so important that parents who find themselves in this sort of unfortunate circumstance do follow that chain of command, because it's the proper and appropriate way to approach it. And very often, without going too far up that chain of command, people are able to find resolution to those issues.
No, but I do want to add, though, and to reinforce the concern you raised in your question, that in this Delaware regulation, Regulation 225, it talks about if a child wishes to, self-identify as a different gender or race, it talks about getting permission from the parents, but there's a long paragraph about that, saying that the school should consult with the child about how supportive the parent is.
Right.
So it's kind of a catch-22, because it uses the word permission, but basically the policy, here's how I would boil down this language: they will not ask for the parent's permission if there is any chance that the parent will not grant permission. And so it's really not, it's written in a way such as that it appears to respect the parents, but it actually does exactly the opposite. It defers to the child. And if the child says, my parents will kill me, my parents will be angry with me, my parents don't accept this, or they wouldn't accept it, then the school will not tell the parents. And that's
right.
Just outrageous, because the parents are the ones who ultimately have both the legal and moral responsibility for the upbringing of their children.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Well, Peter, from the perspective of one who works in our nation's capital and who kind of has a bird's eye view of issues like this nationally, what connection, if any, do you see between these latest developments in Delaware and the bathroom privacy debates that have been taking place in states like North Carolina and Texas and also at the national level within the current presidential and the former presidential administration in recent months and recent years?
Well, of course, there is a direct connection. The transgender movement has just exploded in recent years. Certainly, we've seen both positive and negative developments. Last year, the Obama administration had issued a Dear Colleague letter to every school district in the country, basically ordering them to adopt this radical pro-transgender policy nationwide, under implicit threat, at least, of losing federal funds. Well, the new administration, the Trump administration, reversed that, has withdrawn that Dear Colleague letter, and so that is positive news. It means that school districts around the country can no longer appeal to the threat of federal funding being withdrawn as their excuse for adopting these radical policies. Unfortunately, the fact that the federal government is not coercing them to do it doesn't mean that a lot of states and individual school districts won't go ahead and do it anyway,
right,
out of their own sense of political correctness. Now, you mentioned the bathrooms. The bathrooms have become a flashpoint. The bathrooms are hardly the only concern about the transgender movement, but they're certainly a flashpoint, especially when we're talking about school children. These are not going to be people who have had gender reassignment surgery. That, at least so far, is not given to minors. And therefore, you're talking about males who have all of the male genitalia being given the right to appear fully nude in the locker room and showers, you know, of our schools. And a lot of people are rightly outraged at that. Now, the Delaware regulation is actually not as extreme as some other policies, not as extreme as the Obama policy would have been, because it doesn't sort of foreclose the possibility of some sort of special accommodation being given. However, you know, this is an issue that is clearly a concern all across the country, and we saw that debate, especially in North Carolina.
Now, Peter, how should we as Christians respond when we encounter students and young people in general who may feel confused about who they are? And how can we prepare ourselves and our children to reach out with authenticity and just a genuine love and compassion to these individuals, as opposed to kind of engaging in a conflicting way that may end up doing more harm than good?
Well, I think you raise a very important point. And I was able to visit a few weeks ago with some physicians who actually have been speaking out on this, who are quite expert on the medical issues. And one of them said something that I think that is important. They said, we must understand that the pain these people experience is real. There's no question that someone who's experiencing gender dysphoria is in pain, and they deserve our compassion. But our compassion should not be affirming a fiction or even, you know, encouraging them to adopt an identity which is fundamentally at odds with their natural reality of who they are. That's not compassionate to do that. But certainly, you know, we should treat someone kindly without any sort of cruelty or mockery. So I think it is a delicate balance. We should treat everyone with kindness, but at the same time, we have to speak the truth in love.
Well, Peter, I know that you and the Family Research Council have produced some very helpful resources for individuals who may encounter these issues. I know you mentioned earlier in our conversation a pamphlet, and I want to give you another opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to avail themselves of these really valuable and informative resources that you have.
Yes, if you go to our website at frc.org, that's FRC for Family Research Council, and then you probably just put in the search engine the word transgender at our website, and you'll come up with the pamphlet I mentioned, A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education, as well as our other publications, more general publications on the transgender movement and so forth.
Well, Peter Sprigg, thank you so much for your time today, for this very informative conversation and the great resources that you and the Family Research Council have pulled together for folks across the country to understand these issues better and how they can reach out in love and compassion, but also in truth to individuals who are facing these confusing situations, whether individually or in their schools or in their communities. So we're really grateful for you all, for your partnership, and all that you do for the betterment of families across our nation.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.